Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hellfire, a Jonathan Grave thriller by John Gilstrap. Read by Basil Sands. Chapter 1. Ryder Kendall had heard every word spoken from the front seat. They thought he was asleep, and like every other adult, they believed that just because a kid's eyes were closed late at night, he'd been struck deaf. He should be so lucky. He hadn't slept more than a few minutes in the past 3 days, not since the FBI crashed their house and tore his world apart. Now everything was ruined. He and his brother, Jeff, were being driven to some kind of orphanage by a lady driver who he figured had to be a cop, and a priest named Father Tim. Both were nice enough to their faces, but the quiet conversations revealed their true thoughts. They pitied him and his brother. They felt sorry for them. When the lady driver wondered how the boys would ever get past this kind of trauma, Father Tim shushed her, said that such things ought not be discussed within earshot, as if Ryder hadn't already wondered 1,000 times how much his life was going to suck from now on. Dad had warned him that that trouble was coming. Ryder didn't understand the details, but he wasn't completely surprised when the cops kicked in their door. Okay, he was terrified when the SWAT team pulled him out of bed and onto the floor at 3 in the morning, and the handcuffs hurt, but only for 10 or 15 minutes, until they figured that a 13-year-old and his 11-year-old brother didn't pose any real hazard. After that, the cops let him get dressed, but not without a lady cop with a rifle watching the whole time. She seemed as uncomfortable as he did. After that, they walked him and Jeff straight out to a car that whisked them off to a stranger's house. He never got a chance to say goodbye to his parents. Mom and Dad weren't specific about why they'd done the things that got them sideways with the FBI. Those were the words Dad used. Got sideways. But Ryder was smart enough to know that pissing off the FBI was a big deal. That meant that his parents had committed a federal crime, not a state crime. Everybody knew that federal crimes were the worst. And man, oh man, were there a lot of FBI windbreakers among the cops that invaded his house. "You're going to hear a lot of bad things about me and your mom," Dad had told him just hours before the invasion. "I wish I could tell you that they'd be false, but they're not. I've done bad things."
"I don't understand," Ryder had said. "What did you do?" "You don't want to know the details," Mom had said.
Ryder had taken that as his cue to shut up. Questions never changed bad news. They only slowed it down. Dad had continued. "Of course, when this happens, it will have a huge effect on you and your brother." He'd said it as if they were planning a family trip. "I can't tell you how sorry I am."
"Sorry?" Ryder thought. "What happens to Jeff and me?"
It turned out that the answer came in several parts. Part one, you get shipped to a house of well-meaning but deeply weird people who smelled like hot dogs and old socks, and the family stared at you all the time. Then you get shipped to another place, where they punted Ryder and Jeff to the cop lady and the priest. Now they were on their way to an orphanage called Resurrection House, even though he and Jeff weren't exactly orphans. They were only half-orphans. Tears pressed behind his eyes as he remembered the sound of his dad rushing out of his bedroom after the cops crashed through the front door, the sound of the gunshots, the stillness of Dad's body as he lay there in the hall, the redness of the blood in the carpet.
Ryder had no idea what this Resurrection House thing was all about, but for now he figured that the Resurrection place had to be better than that first douchebag house. Ryder had always possessed an uncanny ability to read people. Not their minds, not like one of the Legilimens from the Harry Potter stories, but he was great at reading their intentions, their state of ease. It was like what they called stranger danger in school, and what Dad used to call situational awareness at home. Right now, Ryder knew that the grown-ups in the car were upset about something. They leaned close to each other and talked quietly. The driver lady kept glancing up into the rearview mirror as if she saw something that made her nervous. She had spiky white hair, but not the kind of white that comes with age. In the mirror, lit up by the lights of the car behind them, the brown eyes that had looked so friendly before now looked wrinkled and scared. Ryder eased his seatbelt open and rose from his captain's chair to turn and look out the back window. The one other car on the road was driving way too close, the way Mom would drive when she was getting ready to pass. "Please get back in your seat," Father Tim said. He was completely different from what Ryder expected a priest to be. He seemed too young, and he smiled more than church people normally did.
"Are they trying to pass us?" Ryder asked.
The lady driver, her name was Pam, said,
"If they were, they've had plenty of time to do it."
The priest repeated, "Ryder, I really want you in your seat." Ryder opened his mouth to argue, but he decided to comply instead. This didn't feel right to him. He'd just turned to face front when the follow car's high beams lit up the back window and blue strobe lights painted wild shadows all over their van's interior. Jeff jumped awake in the captain's chair to Ryder's right.
"What's happening?"
"Shut up,"
Ryder snapped. He didn't want to be mean, but if the little dickhead was talking, he wouldn't be able to hear what was being said up front.
"I don't like this," Pam said.
"I'm not doing anything wrong. There's no legit reason for us to be pulled over."
"Well, we can't just ignore them," Father Tim said. The cop behind them popped his siren, as if to cast his vote on what they should do. Pam pushed the button on the dash to turn on the hazard flashers.
"I'm slowing down to 35, she said. "Call 911 to see..."
"Tell me what's happening,"
Jeff insisted, blocking out the rest of Pam's command. Ryder would have been happy to call 911 for them, but the FBI had taken their phones and their computers. Hell, they'd taken everything. He and Jeff weren't allowed to take anything with them but underwear, clothes, shoes, and a jacket. As the van navigated a curve, another wall of blue lights erupted out front. Another police car parked at an angle across the road.
"I guess that decides that," the priest said.
The driver stomped hard on the brakes, making Ryder feel better about his decision to sit back down and belt himself in.
"I'm scared,"
Jeff whined.
"Shut up," Ryder said. "We're all scared. Saying it doesn't help."
Very little about this pickup and delivery had felt right to Tim. And now, this traffic stop was icing on the cake. He fumbled with his phone as he extracted it from his pocket.
"What do we do now?"
he asked.
"We sit," Pam replied.
A retired cop, she'd chosen social work as her second career. The same customer base, she explained, but nobody wants to shoot the lady with the clipboard and the smile.
"Put the phone back in your pocket. You don't want to have anything in your hands. They'll tell us everything we need to know."
Out front, in the wash of the van's headlights, the cop's door opened, and a uniformed officer took a position behind his engine block, his hands full of pistol.
"Holy shit!"
Tim exclaimed out of reflex. It came out much louder than he wanted.
Pam seemed less unnerved.
What the hell?
Behind them, Ryder and Jeff almost bumped heads as they leaned into the center space to see out the front windshield.
Oh my God!
Jeff blurted.
Are they going to shoot us?
Stay in your seats, boys, Tim said. An electronic loudspeaker popped from behind. Driver, turn off your engine and drop the keys out the window.
Remember, Pam said in a clipped tone as she turned the engine off. You want your hands to be empty. What the hell is going on? Tim asked. Ask me again in 5 minutes, Pam replied. Do everything they say. Move slowly and keep your hands visible at all times.
She made a show of dangling her keys out the window before dropping them to the pavement. The cop on the loudspeaker said, Driver, open your door and step out of the car. Keep your hands visible at all times.
I told you, Pam said.
She moved carefully. With her left hand extended out the window, she reached across her body with her right to pull the handle that opened the door. When it was unlatched, she used her foot to push it all the way open.
Driver, step out. Hands visible, fingers splayed, and sidestep 2 steps to your left. Leave the door open.
Pam gave Tim a look he wasn't sure how to interpret and went about the business of following directions. She slid off her seat, her feet found the ground, and then she stepped off to the side. She stood with her arms out to her sides, cruciform, in a posture that impressed Tim as one that would quickly become exhausting.
I'm really scared,
said the younger brother. Jeff. Tim owed it to them to remember their names.
This will all be over in a few minutes, Tim assured.
Front seat passenger, the guy on the loudspeaker said. Same drill. Open your door. Keep your hands visible.
The instructions were pretty much the same as before. Tim turned so he could see both of their faces. Adolescents looked so much younger when they're frightened.
Ryder and Jeff, listen to me, he said. There's been some kind of misunderstanding. I'm sure everything will be fine. After I get out, I want you both to listen carefully and do exactly what the officer tells you to do.
Are we in trouble?
Ryder asked. His voice trembled.
I don't know, Tim said. But if you do what they say, everything will be fine.
Father Tim slid out of the passenger side door and then moved away from the van.
Hands farther out to the side, the cop commanded.
Tim raised his hands higher, splayed his fingers farther out. Could they not see his white collar?
Stay cool, officers, Tim said. I'm a priest, and my driver is a retired police officer.
For a second or two, nothing happened. Maybe longer. This was wrong. All of it seemed unreal, unearned.
The kids.
Tim turned to look back at the boys, and that's when he heard the gunshot. Pam fell, and then something kicked Tim hard in the chest as he fell to the street. He wondered how anything could feel so hot and not set him on fire. He thought, please, God, forgive me. Everything went dark. The spatter from Pam's exploding head painted the window just inches from Ryder's face. He jumped and screamed something even he didn't understand. Another shot followed, and Father Tim dropped from view.
No!
Jeff yelled.
Oh my God, they killed them!
Ryder didn't say anything. His mouth wouldn't work. Through the smear of gore, he watched the cop from the front racing toward the van. His flashlight beam bounced as he ran. Ryder's stomach churned. He thought he might puke. Except he didn't have time. The cop pulled his sliding door open at the same time the other cop opened the slider on Jeff's side. They opened them hard, causing the panels to rebound halfway closed again.
"Get out!"
the closest cop said.
"What did you do?"
Ryder shouted.
"You killed them!"
The cop pressed his pistol against Ryder's forehead.
"Open that mouth of yours again if you want to join them."
The cop's face looked like it had been bloodied, a red splotch covering part of his forehead and eye. To Ryder's right, Jeff yelled,
"Leave me alone! Ryder, help!"
The other cop slapped Jeff across the forehead with the barrel of his pistol, and the boy collapsed.
"Jesus!"
Ryder yelled.
"Jeff! God damn it, leave him alone!"
The last part of his words sounded clipped and garbled as the cop with the weird face shoved a rough sack over his head and tied it tight across his neck. Out of reflex, Ryder brought his hands to his throat and pulled at the cinch.
"No!"
he yelled, and he punched blindly at his attacker.
"Get this thing off!"
A light flashed behind his eyes, and there was nothing.
Tim hurt. His chest felt hot, hollow, and numb all at the same time. He thought his eyes were open, but the world was dark. He thought he could see the outline of trees across the black sky, but he couldn't be sure.
"I'm alive,"
he said aloud. It was a test of his voice. It didn't sound right, as if coming from someone else and far away.
"But I'm dead soon."
The words didn't frighten him, though maybe they should. What they did was focus him. He needed help, but out here in the wee hours he could go undiscovered for longer than it would take for him to bleed out. Ancient Boy Scout first aid training tried to form in his mind. Should he raise his legs to counter the onset of shock, or should he try to raise his torso to slow down the bleeding? Tim winced against the anticipated pain as he finger-walked his left hand to his pants pocket, where he could find his phone. Moving an arm meant flexing a chest muscle, though, and that brought the fiery agony back in technicolor.
"Oh, damn it!"
he grunted as he brought the phone up to his face. He shut his eyes against the brightness of the screen. He pressed the voice command button and said,
"Dial 911.
The phone replied,
"Please say a command."
The electronic lady's voice sounded even bitchier than usual.
"Call 9.
"Hey, Kim!" a voice shouted. "This one's still alive."
Tim closed his eyes again.